everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright.
A little spooky voice this morning, Jenna Wolf.
That was not my spooky voice. That was my regular voice. It was spooky music.
Okay.
That was my regular, okay. It's time to start the show voice. So we're going to do just that. Big day of NFL trades yesterday. Demaryius Thomas is joining Deshaun Watson. The Packers shipped off a star defender. But why don't we start with the Philadelphia Eagles, who made Carson Wentz a very happy quarterback yesterday. Philly traded a third-round pick to the Lions for wide receiver Golden Tate. Asked why he traded for a guy on the last year of his deal, Eagles GM Howie Roseman said he's one of the most productive receivers in the league and that his run-after-catch numbers are phenomenal. Tate now joins the receiving core of Nelson Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey. All right, CeCe, what impact do you think Golden Tate can have on this Eagles offense?
I like the fact that Howie Roseman, the general manager, he focused on a skill set as far as what it will provide not only to Carson Wentz, to this offense, and in this new NFL. People would think that maybe Philadelphia might go for a running back. There's a couple running backs potentially could be available. Why don't they trade for them? If you can't get a running back or you're happy with your running backs, you have to get a guy like Golden Tate, a guy who can play in space, a guy can play in the slot. He's also played outside. He is not just a short area quickness guy. He's not only limited to the slot. He has deep speed, so he's not a possession receiver. To me, he's one of the guys I like watching and play because he's developed. He left Seattle after being the third receiver there to an increased role and the money in Detroit. In the last 4 years, he's been phenomenal. You're talking about he's the most dangerous guy after the catch we have in the NFL. Yep. You think, well, what about Odell Beckham? Odell doesn't get the ball as much as he does and doesn't do as much as him. Because the game plan and what they've done in Detroit, he's been able to highlight his skill set. I believe he's a tremendous addition to the Philadelphia Eagles and Carson Wentz. Because people say, well, they gave up a third-round pick. That's a lot of compensation. He's in the last year of his contract. If he decides to leave Philadelphia, they're going to get a compensatory pick that's probably going to be a third or fourth rounder anyway. So I like the move to Philadelphia. It doesn't cost them that much. And if they lose him after this year, they'll be able to move on by getting another pick in the future.
Those compensatory picks work like what you lose in free agency versus what you bring in free agency. So if the Eagles decide to stand pat mostly in free agency and they let Golden Tate leave, they get something back.
Yeah, Detroit, instead of getting a pick in 2020 after him leaving after this offseason, they're going to get the pick right now from Philadelphia.
And Detroit, I don't think, would have ended up even getting a compensatory pick because I think they're going to be buyers this offseason. So even if they were going to let him go, they were going to bring in enough this offseason to where it would probably minimize what their compensation would be. But for the Eagles, C touched on it. He is, since he came into the league, one of the five most productive yards after catch guys in all of football and the most productive yard after catch high volume guy, meaning the other guys who have similar yard after catch numbers to him are not guys that are getting targeted 100 plus times per season. Mm-hmm. What have the Eagles struggled with in the passing game this year? They're bottom six in the league yard after catch. So that is a puzzle piece that fits perfectly where we are missing, you are adding, and that fits well. The Eagles this year have one game where they've scored more than three touchdowns. That was the Giants game. One game where they've scored more than 24 points. The Giants game. Like, Philadelphia, yes, they had a path to victory last year that was great defense and ground you down. But they also had a path of, we're just going to crush you. We're going to put up 35 points. They've only done anything close to that once all year, and it was against a terrible Giants team. But what I like the most about this move for Philly is it's Howie Roseman saying, I know the first half of the season didn't go right. You know what? We're still going for it. We still think we can defend our crown. We still think we can win this division and make noise in the playoffs. We are willing to give up. But the 85th pick of the draft for maybe only eight games and a playoff run of Golden Tate, it's worth it to us because it's a shot in the arm. And maybe for the guys in the locker room, it reminds them, man, last year we did it with Jay Ajayi. and that helped us win a Super
Very
Bowl.
Aggressive,
this
yeah.
year, maybe we do it with Golden Tate and helps us get close or get back to it.
All right, before we get to how far the Eagles can go with Golden Tate, you talk so much, CeCe, about this, about offenses looking very much like the starting five on a basketball team. Mm-hmm. So tell me what Golden Tate does, what position he would basically play between Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey.
Okay, let's see. Alshon Jeffrey right now is their best receiver, and Zach Ertz is the tight end, is very, very good. So if we're going to starting five, I would say Alshon Jeffrey is going to be my center. Zach Ertz is going to be my power forward. I believe my scoring forward is going to be Golden Tate. He's a better run after the catch than Nelson Aguilar, trying to use the backs out of the backfield. That's how you're able to supplement the passing attack. That's how you're able to put. When I want a wide receiver unit, I want a point guard. I want a guy who can score. I want a big guy. But Golden Tate is the best wide receiver on Philadelphia's roster now.
Yeah.
He has the most skill. With Alshon Jeffries, they should look good together because Alshon is a possession receiver, red zone target. Golden Tate, he's everywhere. He's all over the field, and he's very, very friendly to the quarterback. Well, what do you mean by that? He runs his routes, and he gives indicators. We saw last week where two interceptions in the Minnesota game were caused, or two turnovers were caused by the wide receivers, Thielen fumbling and Stephon Diggs giving a wrong indicator for Kirk Cousins, who threw an interception return for a touchdown. He doesn't do that. He's a veteran wide receiver. He's played with veteran quarterbacks, and he's the kind of guy that I believe can bring a spark to Philadelphia's locker room right now. Give them the type of energy and bounce to give them a lift so they can go on this playoff run.
I wasn't sure you were going to agree with me, but you just said it. I do believe he's the best wide receiver on Philly now, and that's nothing against Alshon
Jeffrey.
Yeah, well,
actually, you agree with me.
Okay, well, just because you got to say it first. My point is when I heard this news come down, I thought, wow. I mean, he's going to come in and be their best wide receiver.
Which means Aguilar moves to third. Well, he'll be the third.
If we're ranking them, sure, but really
Aguilar's not playing as well in the slot. That's why there is a need for someone like Golden Tate. Aguilar, we thought, had a breakout season last year. This year, he's kind of gone back to year number two.
And he's not as important as a third wide receiver is on a lot of teams because of Ertz. Because one of your best receiving options is your tight end. So if you have Ertz, Jeffrey, and Golden Tate, that's going to take care of the vast majority of your passing attack, and no receiver in the league has broken more tackles than Tate. I am curious your opinion on what the time frame of picking up the offense is. Golden Tate has went to Seattle, then Detroit, now he's in Philly. How long until he can really make a true impact?
It's still going to take time. I wouldn't see him as a full-time player for a month. I still see him playing initially 20 plays to start with. Also, I wouldn't be surprised if potentially they moved him back to return punts. He can return some punts to be able to try to make plays. I know Doug Peterson, they know the urgency to it. So when you have a player that has come from two good situations, I look to him to be a smart football player. He's got a high football IQ. So they'll try in the next 2 weeks, how can we get him to play in 20 to 30 plays? And also some of those bubble screens and things like that, they're not real, real sophisticated.
Right.
So I think those things can be implemented in week number one.
And Philly, by the way, on a bye this week coming off the London game. So he won't have to worry about anything for at least another 12 days.
Second year in a row, Howie Roseman went out and got aggressive and picked up someone, JHI, last year, and Golden Tate this year. Can you see this offense starting to put it together? Can you see them getting back to where they were last year with what the team looks like right now, maybe back to the
Golden
Super Bowl?
Golden Tate helps, but he's not going to help Jason Peters, the left tackle. He's not going to help Lane, the right tackle, because they have not played good football. So, yes, they have more weapons. They have more things to be able to get the ball out of Carson's hand. I like the fact that even though Golden can be a deep threat, he's so good run after catch. You can throw him the ball right now. So that will help the offensive line. It's almost like an extended running game. But they got to get their offensive line together. And personally, Jason Peters, after coming back, taking a reduction in salary, this is the worst football I've seen him play in at least 10 years. So that's what I'm going to be watching, that offensive line in Philadelphia, even though they have one more weapon to be able to throw to.
And listen, Philly understands the situation they're up against. Washington's 5-2. With, as I've said before, the softest remaining strength of schedule in football. The Eagles are 4-4, and they have 5 divisional games left. Here's their non-divisional games: at the Rams, at the Saints, and home for the Texans. Those are three divisional leaders right now, in addition to having to play Washington twice, having to play Dallas twice. So it is, Philly knows they've got to find a way to, at a minimum, go 6-2. So this was the best available player they could acquire. They did it. Now, if they end up going 4-4 in the second half and they lose Golden Tate, they're going to say maybe this was a shot they want back. But he also, the one other thing about Golden Tate is he is a fiery personality. He's a guy that is known, he had the skirmishes with Percy Harvin back in the day with Seattle. Like, he's going to bring an edge to that locker room that could be useful for a team that right now is almost stuck in a post-Super Bowl malaise. So I like this move for Philadelphia a lot.
All right, the Eagles pick up Golden Tate, not, by the way, from California. It's from Tennessee. We'll talk about that in the break. Coming up, should Aaron Rodgers be furious that the Packers were sellers at the deadline? That's next on First Things First. Here, First Things First, Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. So each week, you, the fan, will be ranking college football experiences. And this week, we're ranking best, uniforms. Oh. Michigan coming in the top spot, followed by Notre Dame, Air Force, and Florida State. What do you think, Nick?
Michigan and Notre Dame do have iconic uniforms. I like the USC uniforms off the top of my head as uniforms that I think, like in that late afternoon West Coast sun,
sure,
look great. See, what Ohio State, now aside, do you have a particular college football uniform?
No, I don't think even those, their traditional uniforms and everything, I don't think they're the best. Notre Dame and Michigan have the best helmets.
Sure.
Okay, and I know that's a huge part of the uniform. Their helmets are iconic. And I just remember watching them on Saturdays as a kid, those two schools.
I like the older Notre Dame helmets more than the newer, shinier. They seem to have added almost like a Nike Oregon flair to the helmets lately that's not quite like what
yes,
I remember.
It's a little off color, too.
Right.
Yeah, but the helmets are iconic. I love it. Golden Domers. Getting it done. Oregon, they changing uniforms right now.
Right.
I don't know what the team colors are.
Oregon's got 35 of them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to the Packers fire sale in a second. But first, Kyrie, cleanly shaven, dazzles us with the behind-the-back move, floats it over Blake Griffin.
Imagine that, see? Kyrie Irving starts looking like Kyrie Irving, and he starts looking like Kyrie Irving.
Oh, yeah, Kyrie had a great half. It lets us know he wasn't playing really good before this. Looked very good last night. Looked far more explosive. And keep your hair cut low, man. It's a better look for you.
The hair, the beard, it all looked like vintage Kyrie.
Same game. Reggie Jackson brings the ball up, gets bumped.
Ooh.
Still hits the three.
Ooh.
Right, ref didn't bail him out. Didn't bail him out there. He's looking for the foul there.
It was right before the half, so he has to throw it up. But that's a heck of a shot, man.
It really was.
Next, Terrence Ferguson with a perfect alley-oop to Russ Westbrook against the Clippers.
This game put him up 20 with a few minutes left. A little exclamation point.
Russ was into this game last night now.
He don't like Patrick Beverley. Maybe.
No. He was into this one.
Rocking the baby all night, doing that little celebration. I love Russ so much. Terrence Ferguson's nice little emerging player for them.
Moving on to yesterday's trade deadline. Guess who's no longer a Green Bay Packer? All right, so the guessing game doesn't really work on TV. Ty Montgomery, after he returned a kickoff he wasn't supposed to, then fumbled when he definitely wasn't supposed to. Green Bay dealt Montgomery to the Ravens for a 7th-round pick, but wait, there's more. They also sent Pro Bowl safety Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, not funny, to Washington in exchange for a 4th-round pick. So the Packers sit at 3-3-1, chasing the 4-3 Chicago Bears. Nick, I'll start with you. Were you surprised the Packers were such big sellers at the deadline?
The Ty Montgomery thing doesn't matter much to me. I'm not that surprised by. The Ha-Ha Clinton Dix trade was shocking to me. I understand that he's a pending free agent this coming year, and maybe they thought they weren't going to sign him. But look at the teams that either are the best teams in football or have older quarterbacks that you don't know what the window will be and what they did. The Saints, they added Eli Apple a week ago. The Patriots, they were in the market and they added Josh Gordon and we thought they might add more. The Rams, who are the best team in football, they added Dante Fowler. The Chiefs were in the market for Earl Thomas before he broke his leg. The Packers have Aaron Rodgers in year 14. They're not in first place in their division. They're in a dogfight. So let's get rid of the best defensive player we've drafted in the last 6 years. Let's get rid of a guy who Pro Football Focus says has been the second best safety in all of football this year. Why? so we can have the 115th pick of the upcoming draft? This is just another example to me of the Packers not understanding the asset they have in Aaron Rodgers and the Packers adding to the degree of difficulty for the most talented player in the league. This trade surprised me and as a football fan angered me because I don't understand what Green Bay is doing.
Actually, he's going to be partnered there with DJ Swearinger. Pro Football Focus has DJ Swearinger second, Earl Thomas first, and HaHa Clinton Dixon third.
Right. I left Earl out because he's out for the, injured for the year, but
yeah,
sure.
So these two safeties now, not only does he help the Washington Redskins, but he helps one of their best players. Now, DJ Swearinger, he doesn't have to play in the middle of the field because that's where HaHa Dixon, that's where he plays in the middle of the field. HaHa Dixon's better in man-to-man coverage if you want to match him up and put DJ Swearinger in coverage somewhere else. So it makes the Washington Redskins, it lets you know that they are trying to win. He's a good football player, I believe underrated. When you play with Aaron Rodgers and you play with some of the bad defensive players and bad defensive scheme Green Bay's had, it's hard to give a player like him the type of accolades. Now, he has been voted into the Pro Bowl, and Pro Football Focus has him ranked as one of the top safeties, but he's not a player that we talk about a lot. The Redskins, I believe, like you, Nick, they got a lot better yesterday in picking up HaHa Clinton Dixon.
This is what I don't understand. What are the Packers doing? What are they doing? They play the Patriots this week. In a couple weeks, they're at the Vikings. After that, they have another tough road game at Seattle. Do they think they're done? Are the Packers, they're not going to say it, but they think they're going to miss the playoffs for the first time with a healthy Aaron Rodgers since he became the full-time starter? Is that what they're telling us? Are the Packers just saying, we have a new general manager. We want to let him have as many assets as possible in Brian Gutekunst this upcoming year? Because I look at the Packers, I thought the Packers should be encouraged by what happened last week. You went to the Rams, the only undefeated team in football, and if not for a bonehead play by Ty Montgomery, I believe you win that game. You dominate the first half. It takes three spectacular special teams plays by the Rams for them to beat you by 2 points. And your reaction to that is to get rid of one of your best defenders, certainly your best player in the secondary. I know Jaire Alexander, the rookie, is playing very well, but HaHa Clinton Dix is their most established guy. The Packers, over the last 7 years, every year have spent their first-round pick on a defensive player. He's the best one they've drafted, and now you move on from him. This is perplexing to me.
But all the moves over the course of the last couple of years that the Green Bay Packers have made with Aaron Rodgers have seemingly been perplexing. It's one of these, we have Aaron Rodgers, everything else will figure out a way to work itself out. Are you as surprised with what the Packers did as Nick is?
No, I'm not surprised. And, Nick has a lot more emotion attached to it. Like, I could care less what the Packers do. Like, they've been doing things their own way, so why would I emotionally get attached to it? They changed the organization. They changed the structure. They have a new general manager there. He's starting to make changes to be able to get things his way. I don't know where he's heading, so I'm just going to give him time. He just took over. He made a couple coaching changes. He made a couple personnel changes that I believe are far more than X and O's. I think it's about fitting in long-term to his plans. I believe that's why he moved off of these two players. I'm just going to be patient because he just took over. I'm not going to put him under a sense of urgency because of Aaron Rodgers' body clock. That's not his fault. He just took over the team. He should have the same amount of time that we give other teams to be able to try to put his type of fingerprint on the organization, what type of players he wants to have moving forward. I don't know what he's going to do, but there will be a lot of eyes on Green Bay to watch and see what's his next move and what's the meaning behind the move.
No matter who their quarterback was, I would think a guy you drafted, one of the best players you've drafted, or your organization has drafted, who is coming up on free agency, playing some of the best football of his career, that's the type of player you want to extend. That's the type of player that after this year you are hoping to bring back. But I want to remind the Green Bay Packers something, because we have gotten, I think, a little skewed by the last 25 years of Favre to Rodgers. You had Lombardi and Starr, you won all those championships, you've been playing pro football a year longer than the NFL has existed. There was a 25-year stretch between Starr, before Favre, where you won one playoff game, and it was in a strike year. A 25-year stretch where you had two seasons in totality where you won double-digit games. Like, when Aaron Rodgers is done, there is nothing to say you won't go back to that. This isn't the Steelers that have been relevant in every decade the NFL has ever existed. This team went through a long drought. We know they're not going to be a viable superstar free agent destination. At least they haven't been in the past. The way you're going to get great players is drafting them and keeping them, not drafting them and trading them while you're making a playoff
push. How far can the Packers go with what they have now?
Because of 12, but it just got harder.
They were a marginal playoff team before they made the trade. All right? So it's up that they won't make the playoffs.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll talk more about this over the course of the show. Coming up, though, is it panic time for the Houston Rockets after falling to 1-5? That's next up.
Nick, wasting his emotions.
I like watching the best players play in the biggest games.
Tomorrow, five-time All-Star Blake Griffin joins the show. He's super tall. We're going to have to adjust the lighting. That is tomorrow right here. CeCe, I wonder how we'll feel about your open dunk contest idea. Now we got someone we can ask.
Oh, yeah, I got to fix it up. He's a little big. I got to fix it up when they're in studio. I get real aggressive when they're not in studio. In studio.
But we've been – Blake's played well this year.
Oh, he's balling now.
Complimentary of Blake this season.
Yeah, he's got one of their assistant coaches I grew up with who designs their offense. Micah Norai, he runs their offensive
sets. You grew up with him?
Yes, he went to same high school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited for Blake tomorrow.
Time for us to go viral. Russell Westbrook's been doing a Rock the Baby celebration after some of his baskets this season. He was asked about it after last night's win against the Clippers, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, you got little kids. You got to give the little babies, put them to sleep. You got little kids on you. Okay. That's what happens. Little guards, you got to rock them.
I literally need a second explanation for the first explanation.
He was saying that's what you do with your little babies.
Right.
And he's saying the defenders are like his little babies. And he's rocking them. Yeah, he's saying they're little kids.
It's like I throw you the ball in the low post.
We're on the same team.
Yeah, you're on the same. You have the ball.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Nick's guarding you.
Right.
You just take your time with them because you're going to take them to school, so you just rock them to sleep. Then you take them to the hole.
Ah.
That's what he's talking about.
That is the explanation I was looking for.
That was wonderful, Sam.
And then take them to the hole.
I usually have to work as translator for you. And you, the right there, worked as translator for Jenna. That was wonderful. That was great teamwork.
Am I just always on the bad end of
translate? No.
I gave you the ball. Let's take it to
Jenna. Yeah, so I'm rocking.
You've only done one bad thing today so far, and that was that ridiculous Golden State joke.
That was one of the best things I've said, but I saved it for something to happen, and it didn't work. Stories to start your morning brought to you by Unexpected Energy of ExxonMobil. All right, so the first edition of the college football playoff rankings came out yesterday. No surprise, guys. Alabama at number one, followed by Clemson, LSU, and Notre Dame to round out the top four. CeCe, you're shaking your head. Did the committee get this right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to start off with. Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Notre Dame. They had the great win over Michigan to start the season, have followed that up to be able to stay unblemished. Yeah, it's going to be an exciting race to the plate. Well, it's going to be exciting for the other three. Bama's going to be there.
Bama's going to be there, and with the way this sets up, Bama's toughest game remaining this season until the playoff is this weekend at LSU. And the way this sets up, they could lose at LSU and still end up in the playoff, assuming they beat Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Like, Bama has almost locked up their playoff spot already with how the rankings are and how they've played. But I think the committee got it right early on.
Moving on to a showdown of two great quarterbacks, Tom Brady taking on Aaron Rodgers in Foxborough Sunday night. How about this? They're facing off for only the second time in their careers. Brady said, Aaron Rodgers is inspiring even for me. See, what do you make of Brady's comments?
Aaron Rodgers is even inspiring. Even though I've won more Super Bowls than anyone, even for someone like myself.
Yeah. Tonight's a little brag.
I get it, Tom.
Yeah.
I understand.
That's my take exactly.
It must be hell to be Tom Brady.
Right. You ever see the clip of Beyonce was being interviewed and someone said, just introduce her, said, you're Beyonce, and her response was, thank you. It was just like, that's where Tom Brady is. It's like, even by my high standards.
It was like when you asked Deion Sanders. Deion, he said, you're the greatest. He didn't lie.
Right. He's in that echelon. I can't believe these guys have only played once against each other. I get it because you're in different conferences. You're only going to play once every 4 years. But that's crazy.
All right, to the NBA now. Kyrie Irving had his best performance of the young season. 31 points on 16 shots along with 5 boards and 5 assists. Boston beats the Pistons 108-105. Would you make it Kyrie's performance, Nick?
The only disappointing thing is that we were surprised by it, that it took a couple weeks of the season for Kyrie to have, by his standards, a really good game.
Absolutely, yeah.
He had a few awful games, but he got a shave, got a haircut, and started looking like himself again. And this was a game the Celtics were in firm control of until about 4 minutes left. The Pistons hit a bunch of threes to make it close at the end. But, this was what the Celtics need from Kyrie and what they expect from Kyrie.
Yeah, this is the first game in 7 games, Jenna, that I thought he was the best Celtics.
Yeah.
Other games, I thought he was either the second, third, some games, fourth best Celtic. So nice to see him come back from the 2-point performance. Nice to see him. Seems like he went to a spa, got a steam shower, shave,
little
and everything.
Cleanse.
Yeah, he definitely, he looked like he needed to cleanse.
All right, finally, Lonzo Ball took some of the blame for the Lakers' recent struggles. He had a rough Monday night with just 4 points and 1 assist. Lonzo says he's not doing his job and needs to be more engaged. All right, Nick, what did you make of Lonzo's comments?
Listen, I respect that the young player is taking some of this on himself. I don't think engagement has been his issue. I think Lonzo, very rarely do I watch him, and it looks like he's just going through the motions.
When he's saying engage, I think that in his second year in the league, he's starting to realize that there's a certain level of intensity that he hasn't been engaged to. It's not as if he's engaged. Not engaged, but he's not engaged at the level that he needs to be engaged at. And sometime through competition, you see that these guys are operating at a higher level of intensity than I am. Now, from his body language and his normal, like, that's his normal MO. But it's not going to work for him in the NBA. Like, we were worried about him last year. Like, how intense will he be game in and game out? And I think that's what he's talking about when he says engaged. He's talking about the overall intensity for which he's going about doing his work.
But you don't want him to change his approach. Like, there are guys who are very successful who aren't nearly. Like, Steph Curry's not an intense guy. He seems to have a laid-back approach. You just want him to.
I do want him to change his approach. I mean, go ahead, C.
Steph is intense. You and I sat behind Steph Curry, and we were there 30 minutes before the game. Now, I typically do a good job of getting the eye contact. The guys, Draymond said, what's up? DeMarcus Cousins said, what's up to me, KD, because I'm with
you.
Nick. Yeah, he was like, he kind of mean mugged me. But Steph did not look into the crowd. He has an intense pregame routine. He's working on his muscles. He's working on his shooting motion. He's got these things he does. And Steph has a fun personality, but inside the game, he's intense for what he wants to do.
I would compare Steph's during the game demeanor almost to a long striding football player that looks like they're not running hard when they actually are. Like, some things come so easy.
Randy Moss.
Yeah. Where people would say, oh, he's loafing, but if you were to time him, he's running out of 4-4. Like, that. Where Steph, it comes, he's so fluid and it comes so naturally to him, it might maybe looks like he's not trying as hard as he is. For Lonzo, I think Lonzo's biggest issue is right now he doesn't know what exactly his role is. I think his issue was, all right, so I'm injured, I'm off the bench, I'm now in the starting lineup, like, but LeBron's going to dominate the ball. I think he hasn't found his footing this year with the team, but the other much more tangible issue is this. If you're scared to go to the foul line and you don't have an intermediate game, then how effective of an offensive player
can you be? He's only a spot-up jump shooter. And that's a problem.
Right. Like, if you – and because he's a good athlete. He can get to the rim. But guys that can get to the rim have to be okay with getting fouled. This has been – the Lakers now have – their two point guards are two guys that would rather pass the ball than go to the free throw line. And that's a – like, you can take that at times from a big, from a center, especially because they're going to get so many touches down in the post. But if you beat your man and you got a clear path to the basket and then you see a big coming over who's going to have to foul you to stop you, you got to be okay with that. And Lonzo on the year, what's he shot, 10 free throws? No, I'm sorry, 7 free throws on the season. Like that, and we talked about this last year, about his lack of wanting to get to the line, and that one is, I understand he's not a good free throw shooter. Got to work through that. Because getting the other team in the bonus, getting yourself in the bonus, I should say, getting the other team in foul trouble, scoring with the all those things are valuable to him. But I also think he's finding with some stops and starts as far as the lineup goes, finding his way with this Lakers team. I guess he thinks a little added intensity will help that.
All right, let's stick with basketball. Tough game for the Houston Rockets last night, which comes after a tough start to the season for the Houston Rockets. James Harden continues to miss time with a hamstring injury. And Houston lost to Portland 104-85. And Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony combined to shoot 8 of 31 from the floor. And so the Rockets now sit at 1-5 on the season, tied for the worst record in the West. Here's head coach Mike D'Antoni on what has changed since last year.
Last year we played well. Right now we're playing like crap. That's the difference. Just not playing well. It's hard to explain sometimes. We've lost our swagger and we're on our heels. And when you're desperate, it's good on defense because your hair should be on fire, but it's bad on offense. You're struggling. And we got to get out of it, and we got to keep fighting. We'll keep the spirit up. And these guys are good guys, and like I said, we'll find something. And you know, hopefully it's not too late. But we got to get back on the horse. We got to get James back. Obviously, that's a big part of our offense. No excuses. Injuries are part of the game.
Luckily, we play 82 of them. You know what I mean? And, you know, we're gonna keep trying to get guys back, but. Right now we don't like the way it looks like how we do. You know what I mean? If you lose by 15, you lose by one, you still lost. But we just got to get the spirit right, and I think that'll happen as we start playing better.
Look, there's only so many days we can keep saying, well, it's early. Give them time. Give Harden a chance to get back. We'll give this team a chance to get back into it. Are you concerned at all, Nick, about a 1-5 start for the Rockets?
This is, to me, a far greater concern at 1-5 than, for example, the team we talked about yesterday, the Lakers at 2-5, and not because of the one more win, but because of how the teams have lost those games. The Rockets are getting blown out. Like, the Rockets, they have 4 home losses already this year. By the way, they only lost 7 times at home all of last season, and those home losses are all by more than 10 points. They only had 1 such loss all of last season. Lost by 19 to the Pelicans, 11 to Utah, 20 to the Clippers, 19 to Portland. Yesterday, they never led, and they were down by 28 at one point. Like, last season, they started 25-4. This year, they're 1-5. I understand Chris Paul was suspended, now Harden's injured, but this team is not being competitive in these games thus far. That's why the 1-5 is so concerning. It's not, they easily could be 3-3. No, they couldn't. They couldn't easily be 3-3.
It's hard to imagine them getting blown out as many times as they have without having Harden in the lineup. You still think that they are the big three, that being Melo, that being Chris Paul. Harden out of the lineup. Chris Paul looks nothing like a superstar. Melo, I take exception with Melo. Like, he's nowhere near any type of star player. You know he's not going to be good on the defensive end. They're just not as talented. He can talk about not playing as good basketball. Their roster's not as good. So now, this season, they can't sustain an injury like they could last year. Last year, they had injuries, but they were able to overcome them all except the last one, the Chris Paul, in the Western Conference Final. They're not as good, and there's a certain amount of reality to this, and they're going to be struggling for seeding even when Harden comes back because they got a very weak bench.
But this was the team that many people thought was the only team in the league that could really compete with Golden State. This was the one team that we're going to win now. We're going to go after Jimmy Butler. We're going to do everything we can because we have a shot this year to compete with Golden State. What happened?
Well, for Daryl Morey and for James Harden, there has to be a bit of deja vu. 4 years ago, the Rockets were coming off a Western Conference Finals loss to the Golden State Warriors. They had won 56 games that year. People thought they were going to be right back in it the next year. And they went 41-41 and crept to the 8th seed. Then the following year, they got better. Then they added Chris Paul, and you saw what they had. But there does seem to be a bit of an inability for this team, after a great season where you come close, to ratchet up the intensity game one the following season. It feels like it's such a long trek to where you end up wanting to get to that they're not starting the season off with the requisite level of intensity and attention to detail. Last year, Harden missed 10 games. They were 6-4. Like, they managed in those 10 games James Harden missed. So we can't just say, oh, you don't have Harden, so that's going to happen. Like, this team, you were seeing the warning signs before Harden left the fourth game of the year with his hamstring injury.
Yep. And also, Jenna, we sit there and watch the Warriors play the Knicks. Besides them being in the NBA, there's nothing similar. They're in the Western Conference. There's nothing similar about where Golden State is. You talked about how much fun they seem to be having. Their little routines they're going. They enjoy seeing, and they don't even have Cousins back with them, another all-star. Houston's going the other way. So, no, this isn't the team. There is no team in the NBA. So, unless there's some blockbuster trade, it is Golden State and the rest of them.
That, and James Harden, prior to his injury, was the only guy on the team playing at the level or close level he played last year. P.J. Tucker's been worse this year. Clint Capella, who got that big contract extension this offseason, has not been the Defensive Player of the Year candidate that the Rockets thought he was going to be. You're right that Chris Paul has not looked like Chris Paul yet this season. Now, how much of that was the suspension and how much of that is him getting himself into full regular season shape? I don't know. And Melo's been awful. Like, that is undeniable. Melo's not in the top 130
I was
for field
doing
goal
my
percentage.
Best.
Yeah, you did.
I did my best.
No, bravo to you. You really
I said
did,
I was going to try with Melo this year.
And you
year.
Did. So it, when Harden comes back, if they got someone like Jimmy Butler, could he make a difference?
Okay, well, the Jimmy Butler thing, we would have to redo all the math.
How about
on
this?
Everything.
Are they one Jimmy Butler player away from putting it all back together?
From... If they add Jimmy Butler, they reassert themselves as one of the very, very best teams in the league. But you guys know where I stand on Golden State. I think Golden State right now, as presently constituted, is far and away the best team, and that's before they add DeMarcus Cousins. That's where I think they are. But it also looks like Minnesota is just flatly not going to trade Jimmy Butler. Like, Tom Thibodeau, I think, is going to make the owner fire him to trade Jimmy Butler because they're not going to get a better offer than four unprotected first-round picks. That's literally the most picks you're allowed to offer, and Houston offered it. So I don't think Jimmy Butler's coming.
What's the biggest issue that this Rockets team has? If you could fix one thing, what's their biggest issue?
I knew they would struggle losing Trevor Ariza. You just can't just say, he wasn't that good. But the intangible things that he provided, the length, the defense, the constant knockdown shooting that they could rotate, they had another two or three guys who could knock down three-pointers, they don't have enough shot makers. If you're going to play that style and you're going to have the analytics and everything, they don't have enough shot makers on that squad.
We knew that with the loss of Ariza Mbamute, particularly early in the year, defensively, they probably weren't going to be the same team. No one could have anticipated to be a bottom five offense. Right now, they're a bottom five offense. What was the thing last year, C? With 20 games left, they had the best offense in the history of professional basketball on a per possession basis. Right now, they have a worse offense than the Phoenix Suns. Like, come on. And so that can't just be you've missed some of your best players for a couple of games. It's systemic right now in Houston. And if I were my pal Daryl Morey, I'd be concerned. Can't be getting blown out four home games already this year.
All right, let's take a break. Coming back.
That being smart is overrated.
Demaryius Thomas making the Texans contenders in the AFC. Is that true? I'm just saying things while they're finishing up their conversation. We're back after this. Welcome back to the show. Former head coach Eric Mangini joins us.
What up, coach?
Happy Halloween, coach. You dressed up for the festivities. Thank you so much.
I did.
Yep.
Former Browns coach. That's what I'm going as this year. A lot of people have that costume in Cleveland.
Jokes. More and more every year.
Yeah.
Do you guys get together?
Oh, it's like, oh, you have the same costume.
Yeah.
That's great.
That is very funny.
We bump into each other, you know. Good club.
It's a good club.
Yeah.
Every third Friday of the month, former Browns coaches get together.
Yeah. We need more space.
Coach, busy day in the NFL yesterday. That'll happen when you put a deadline on trades. We call it a trade deadline. A lot of talk about where Broncos wide receiver Demaryius Thomas would be traded. Turns out it was the Texans. After losing Will Fuller for the year, the Texans acquired Thomas from Denver for a fourth round pick and a swap of seventh rounders. So Thomas will pair up with DeAndre Hopkins as the Texans continue their playoff push. I'll start with you, Coach. What impact will Thomas have on this Texans offense?
I really like this trade. Now, I was surprised that Houston would do anything with a former Denver player based off the Brocktoberfest, experience, but they went back to it. Losing Will Fuller and to be able to get a player, a quality player at this point in the season is really hard. You look at the waiver wire at the beginning of the season, there's not much there. When you get to midseason, to try to get a guy that can actually have an impact on what you're doing, it's almost impossible to do. So to losing Will Fuller and being able to replace him with Demaryius Thomas, I think, is a great situation for them. And Tennessee is trending the right direction.
Texans.
I mean, the Texans are – Tennessee's not trending the right direction. Right. They're trending the right direction. And I think this is going to open up things offensively. It's a big physical guy who maybe hasn't produced as well as he has in the past. But if you get him reinvigorated, you get him into a team that has a real chance, and you send a strong message to the rest of the team that we're going to do whatever we need to do to move forward.
So we know that Demaryius Thomas's production has dropped off significantly since Peyton Manning stopped being the quarterback there. Now, part of that might be deteriorating skills. Part of that might be the drastically deteriorating quarterback play. This will be the best quarterback he's gotten to play with since he was having Pro Bowl caliber seasons in Denver with Peyton Manning. Now, he doesn't have the same skill set as Will Fuller. Like, the Texans had a really good wide receiver duo, but not a deep wide receiving core, which is why I think they made this move. They had DeAndre Hopkins, who's one of the best in the league, and Will Fuller, who was one of the best deep threats in the league. And they liked the kid they drafted, Kiki QT, as a rookie slot receiver. They drafted him in the fourth round this year, I think. But after that, talking about Sammy Coates and guys that are practice squad type of players. So I understand them wanting to plug in Demaryius Thomas opposite DeAndre Hopkins, but he brings a very different skill set than Will Fuller did. Will Fuller brought straight line speed. He had an excellent rapport with Deshaun Watson on the deep ball. I don't know if Demaryius brings that, but I do think he's better than Sammy Coates. I do think he makes them better right now. What the Texans say is we're 5-3. In a winnable division, we potentially, if the Patriots or Chiefs backslide, maybe we somehow could turn 0-3 into a bye. Like, we're going to go for it right now, and giving up just a fourth-round pick when you're probably going to win your division, I don't think that's overpaying for Demaryius.
I could say he's a solid receiver. That's about as high as I can take it right now. Sometimes his hands are not dependable. Sometimes you don't get the type of effort you think you're going to get out of the body type. I mean, his dimensions are amazing. Almost 6'5", about 225 pounds. Used to be able to run 4.4 every day. Now you don't necessarily see that. So I worry, can they get him in that possession role and be able to feed him? Because I believe Deshaun Watson will make him a better wide receiver, but are his hands going to be dependable? I know in the locker room, he's a hardworking guy. He will fit into the locker room. He's not a high-maintenance guy. You have not seen him, through all the criticism the last several years in Denver, do a bunch of complaining. So he will fit in to what Bill O'Brien is doing. And the Texans, they are trying. At 5-3, their roster did get better when you added Demaryius Thomas to it.
Coach, this is an interesting Texans team to figure out. They're 5-3, but Nick points it out. These are close wins.
Except
that they
won the last
won.
2 weeks.
Right. They pretty close. Does this actually make them legit contenders in the AFC?
Well, losing Will Fuller, I think, would have hurt their chances dramatically, and that's why this trade was very important, because if you're pushing all the coverage to Hopkins, which most teams do, that second guy has to have the ability to make you pay. And if you don't have that second threat that can make you pay when you take away the first guy, then you become less than one-dimensional. So that's where I think this is really important. Does this put them over the edge? I think this keeps them where they were, or keeps them pretty close to where they were with losing Will Fuller.
To your point, Jenna, because of the way they had won prior to these 2 weeks, they didn't have a big margin of error. They don't have a good offensive line. In fact, they have one of the worst in football. They are not an effective running team. We know that they have a lot of talent defensively, and for some reason, up until the last 2 weeks, it had been kind of playing hot and cold throughout the year. It hadn't been the consistency you would have hoped. Once you lose Will Fuller, to Coach's point, in these, the defense was going to have one game plan and one game plan only. Stop DeAndre Hopkins. Now that they have Demaryius Thomas, they at least have to be cognizant of the threat opposite DeAndre Hopkins, which I don't think they would have had to be if it's Sammy Coates out there.
One thing, if I'm a wide receiver coach for Houston, I'm a little more concerned of how I get him involved in the offense, because he's limited for what he can do. He's typically the X, the boundary receiver. Typically, he has not gone in motion. So Nick pointed out he's going to get a lot of single coverage. Coach pointed out he's going to get a lot of single coverage. He's been getting that opposite of Emmanuel Sanders. So that's not going to change. He's not like Golden Tate. Golden Tate, you can do more things to him. Golden Tate, you can move him around, and Golden Tate is so good after the catch. So I look for Golden Tate to have a bigger impact in Philadelphia compared to Demaryius, what he's going to do for the Texans.
And what I'm curious to see, Chris, is with Deshaun Watson and all the plays that he makes off script, how is that going to play into his skill set? What kind of an impact can he make when the plays break down, Deshaun's moving around, and see how he fits into that part of the equation which I'm not, I don't really know at this point how that's going
to
look.
And this year, and to that point, the few big plays down the field he has made has been when Jenna's guy Case is running around off schedule. Case has been actually quite good this year on those. The one thing he's been quite good at this year is those deep passes rolling out or when the protection breaks down. I want to ask you one question, C. Why does a player, aside from quarterback change, why would a player who was seemingly on this trajectory go maybe this one or even down the way Demaryius has during what is, age-wise, what you say should probably have been the prime of his career?
He's a great player. You think at 30, everyone thinks everyone's going to play till they're 32, 33. We don't know where the ceiling is. We don't know if Peyton Manning brought the ceiling. Was that the ceiling for him? Was that as good as he's going to get? And that's what I thought. That's as good as he's going to get. He was a good player, never a great player. Great attitude. He's got a good story personally off the field. But we don't know how high the building is supposed to be. Is it supposed to be 8 stories? Is it supposed to be 80? Now, a lot of times we think because a guy is trending, we think we know. We don't know most of the time. Is this guy close to tapped out? And Peyton Manning and that system, Adam Gase, what they had there in Denver was really, really special. And that brought out the best football in him. That football we'll never see again.
And it's going to be interesting, too. This is the first time he's played for anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, his whole world has changed dramatically. How is that going to impact him? Is it going to add some energy, some fuel, some motivation for him to try to get to that 80th floor? That, to me, is another exciting part of this.
All right, great note about Case Keenum. Got to take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, should Aaron Rodgers be furious that the Packers were sellers at the deadline? Next on First Things First.
The Cooper trade was less of a shock to me, particularly given what you got back for him. I thought it was a good move. And people outside the building's perception was that that's signaling you packing it in and we're in full rebuild mode.
I ain't packing nothing in. You know, we ain't packing anything in. We're working as hard as we have ever worked. Someone makes a phone call to you in the middle of the night and makes you an offer that you think helps this franchise, the Raiders. Mm-hmm. You make that move.
That was a sneak peek of Howie Long's interview with John Gruden. You can catch the rest of it tomorrow on Thursday Night Football when the Raiders take on the 49ers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Good job, Howie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should be very interesting.
Looking forward to that. Back here with Coach Mangini. Coach, guess who's...
Now, Howie's got a nice haircut. Oh, yeah.
It's been that way for a while.
There's some bad ones going around.
Guess who's no longer a Green Bay Packer? I'm going to tell you. It's Ty Montgomery. After he returned to kickoff, he wasn't supposed to. After he fumbled when he definitely wasn't supposed to, Green Bay dealt Montgomery to the Ravens for a 7th-round pick. But wait, there's more. They also sent Pro Bowl safety Ha-Ha Clinton Dix to Washington in exchange for a 4th-round pick. So Packers currently sitting at 3-3-1, being big aggressive at the trade deadline. Coach, were you surprised Green Bay were big sellers at the deadline?
No, not necessarily. When you look at this, sometimes it's addition by subtraction. And obviously they felt differently than Montgomery felt in terms of how clear it was whether he should bring it out of the end zone. We talked about that yesterday where he said he wasn't, you know, he wasn't.
Coach, what do you think really happened?
I think they told him that he should stay in the end zone. He decided to come out. Then he came out and said, they never told me that, and now he's in Baltimore.
For a future, not even this year's 7th-rounder, a 2020 7th-round pick.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where, okay, it's time to say goodbye. And then with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, I know we tagged Pro Bowl onto a lot of players, but a lot of players make the Pro Bowl now that
from injuries.
Well, it's injuries, or the teams in the Super Bowl, or it's like it's different. The Pro Bowl distinction.
The All-Pro distinction. We know that.
It can be a little bit deceiving. And where Ha-Ha came out and said, it doesn't look like I'm going to be a Green Bay Packer next year. As soon as you start talking about next year and how you're not going to be with that team, organizationally you're thinking, is this guy really going to push through injuries? Is he going to make the sacrifices that we need to make as the season goes on? Or is he going to start to make business decisions? So if you get an opportunity to secure a draft pick, and that's a good draft pick for him, and you feel strongly enough about the players they have, to me, I think that makes sense as well.
Listen, I get that some guys make a Pro Bowl because they're an alternate, and some guys make a Pro Bowl legitimately, but then don't play at that level anymore. Our friends at Pro Football Focus say the two best healthy safeties in football this year have been DJ Swearinger and HaHa Clinton Dix. Washington now has both of them. That was a really interesting clip. I hadn't seen that, where Swearinger and Clinton Dix end up slapping five after a big play during the Washington-Green Bay game earlier this year.
Very, very odd.
Right?
Very, very odd for you to be making an interception. Now, I understand that there's a fraternity in the league, fraternity based on your position, but I'm not going to be dapping a guy up after he intercepted my quarterback. So, DJ Swearinger, I don't know.
Different cat.
DJ and HaHa Clinton Dix, I don't know what made them come together. They getting ready to be teammates, though, a week after HaHa picked it off. So, it was just an odd exchange there. I just picked up their
But here's the thing is this. The Packers are not better today than they were yesterday. Unless there is so much more to the locker room stuff. Forget the Ty Montgomery thing. I don't care about that. I'm talking about just the safety. Unless there is so much more to him being upset he didn't get a contract extension. By the way, this is the type of player you should extend. This is the type of player you draft. The only first-round pick you've taken nothing but defensive guys in the last 6 years in the first round. The only one to make a Pro Bowl through hook or crook, injury, whatever, is this player. He's playing at a high level, and you've decided you don't want him on your team next year. And evidently, you don't want him on your team the rest of this year. You're 3-3-1. The leaders in your division are 4-3 and have a quarterback they do not trust. You have Aaron Rodgers. I think you just played your best game of the year. Why are you sellers right now? That's the part I don't get. Why are you sellers right now?
Well, I know Pro Football Focus ranked him, and, you know, obviously, if they say it, it must be true. But when you look at a guy like this, the impact in the locker room, that stuff is real, but we don't hear about it. And,
yes.
And who knows what he's saying about the way the scheme is set up? Who knows what he's saying? There's a lot of ways that you can undercut the situation that you're in. And the defense is actually playing better than it has in a while. So he might have been a Pro Bowler on a defense that was not historically very good. And you have a chance to push forward and potentially take a situation that's negative right now and remove yourself from it.
I believe it works for both organizations. I like the player that Washington's going to get. I like who he's been partnered there with DJ Swearinger. They bring a physical presence. HaHa gives them ability to be able to cover a little more in space than DJ does. But as Coach said, we don't know the intel on the player. The general manager, I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt, just like I do every other general manager, to be able to wait to see what his plan is, even if he hadn't told me what his plan is, like Gettleman did when we discussed the other day. So I'm going to watch this. He obviously, HaHa was not going to be one of his guys into the future. They obviously made a decision not to extend him. So HaHa was probably upset about that. And anytime you start communicating to the media something that didn't need to be communicated, you're under contract. So I could see also this being one of many moves, even not only personnel-wise, but I wouldn't be surprised if Green Bay moved off of their coach. Like, I wouldn't be surprised with the opening in Cleveland and with Dorsey being a system guy and coming from that Andy Reid tree, typically you like hiring people that you're familiar and you're close to. So I think Cleveland will be looking at Green Bay's coach. So
to try to trade for him?
What you're going to call it, but it's just we just look at this season in Green Bay. I look at this season could turn the other way. And then move on from their coaches the way they moved on from these two players yesterday.
Anything with the coaching, though, would happen in the offseason. And that I understand entirely. I don't look at the Packers as a team right now, or I look at the Packers, I should say, as a team that is still a contender. As a team that is up against the toughest month of their season, I actually think they should feel good about how the first major test went. They hate how it ended, but they've got to feel like, man, we dominated the Rams in the first half until the final 3 minutes. We were in position to have the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands down less than a field goal with 2 minutes to go and get a signature win.
But you can't let one game affect how you plan on moving into the future. I just believe the general manager has certain things that he wants to do, and there's certain players that are not going to. They had to get Ty Montgomery off that roster. Anytime the coach gets to the podium and the coach says, I told him to stay. Now, you're either a fool to get up there to go against what he said, because I know the Green Bay Packers told him, gave him special, specific instruction there. There's no way that they told him exactly the same thing they told him for any other kickoff. So once you say that and then you have a player come out and say that, hey, he made the wrong mistake there. He was being very, very selfish. It's time to move on because he's not going to be comfortable working there anymore.
And the reason, Nick, that I think there's more to this story is all the points that you do make. This is a young safety. This is a guy who has had some success and gone to a Pro Bowl. This is a homegrown talent. All those things make you think.
Homegrown by another general manager, though.
That's a good point. But all those things make you think that's the type of guy that you'd want to extend. And the fact that they would move on from him now, typically there's layers underneath this that we're not seeing. Because it doesn't add up when you look at it objectively.
So did the Packers get better or worse yesterday?
Well, with any trade, draft picks, any of that stuff, we're not going to know until we go down the road and see how the secondary works now when you remove
I can't say if they got better or worse, but the general manager got done what he wanted to do. He's closer to his goal. He's moving this team in a direction. When they take one of their marquee players and move him in a trade, they didn't have to. He wasn't forced to do that. So in his mind, Jenna, they're better than what they were yesterday.
Well, and certainly in his mind, they are positioned better, at least in the long term. It is very hard for me to see a scenario, unless the locker room stuff is disastrous, where they are better for the last 8 games of this year without a starting caliber, one of their, without question, no matter what Pro Football Focus says, one of their 5 best defensive players at a minimum. This year, they're not going to be better without him. The draft pick's not coming until next year.
Well, no, what is clear is there's law and order. You're gonna do things the way they want them to do it, or you're gonna be doing it somewhere else. That's a pretty clear message.
Bum bum. Coach, we'll see you later in the show.
did you just do
was that? The theme music.
She tried to do the Law and Order theme
I
music.
I did do the Law and Order.
Do it again, Jenna.
Ready? Bum 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 bum. Coming up, okay. Is Kyrie Irving back to his All-Star form after last night's win? I wait the whole segment,
Jenna,
and then I say
that just cost us $8,000.
You made me do it again.
I know. They still the worst.
Moving on to the Dallas Cowboys. They're coming off their bye week, preparing for a Monday night showdown with the Tennessee Titans. They'll have their new receiver, Amari Cooper, for whom Dallas gave up what some would call a costly first-round pick. Despite the elephant in the room that is Dak Prescott's upcoming contract, Jerry Jones says Amari Cooper has nothing to do with the evaluation of Dak Prescott's future. See, do you agree with Jerry?
Well,
this guy.
I'm curious to hear this one.
I just, not unless. It's like us doing a show. We get evaluated on a regular basis as a show, chemistry, in and out of bumps, how we're doing things as far as our elements. But ultimately, it's really what they think about me. I mean, I know you guys are here and we're doing a show and everything, but I'm just saying as far as my evaluation. So if they like us,
I knew this song was
coming. It's totally different, but if they like the quarterback, and I believe that Jerry, a lot like the people at Fox, they like him. And they like me. So even if my wide receivers are not number one or number twos, they decide they're gonna go with me anyway because they like it. And I believe Jerry is in love with Dak. Now, I do believe this, it's gonna come at a certain price. I believe Jerry's going to say, because of my offensive line, what I want to do with Zeke in the future, because of my rush with Lawrence, I got to pay him. I want to have a Dak as my quarterback, but it's going to come at like a hometown discount. So he's going to try to do a Tom Brady without the championships. That's what I believe, Jerry, and the reason why. Collectively, it's not about the talent around him. Jerry's in love with Dak as his quarterback, and that's the way he's going to move forward.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.